They call it comfort food for a reason, because it gives us comfort. We don't always eat because we're hungry. We eat because we're bored or we're sad or we're nostalgic for something. So food serves a lot of purposes.
You have more power over your health than what you've been told. This is the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions Podcast. I'm Maya Acosta, and I'm passionate about finding healthy lifestyle solutions to support optimal human health. If you're willing to go with me, together we can discover how simple lifestyle choices can help improve our quality of life and increase longevity in a big way. Let's get started. All right. Welcome back to another episode of the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions Podcast with Maya. And today I have a guest who is going to actually speak to us about medicine and also how she's been able to bring the kitchen into her practice, in a sense, to teach us about how we can use food as medicine. I'm so excited to introduce you to Dr. Monique May. She's also known as the physician in the kitchen and is the author of the Amazon bestseller Meal Master, Your Simple Guide to Modern Day Meal Planning. And she's the founder of The Physician in the Kitchen. Dr. Monique is passionate about using her social platform to educate people on the health benefits of food while showing them ways to save time in the kitchen. A member of the American Academy of Family Physicians, she has received accolades as Resident of the Year in 1999 and Physician of the Year in 2019. Her soon-to-be-released book, Doc, Fix My Plate. I love that, with exclamation point. The Physician in the Kitchen's prescription for your healthy meal makeover is a vegan cookbook packed with helpful info for anyone considering a vegan diet. And her link to purchase that book will be in the show notes, and it's docfixmyplatebook.com. So welcome, Dr. Monique. Please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Thank you so much for having me, Maya. As you mentioned, I am Dr. Monique. I am a board-certified family physician known as the Physician in the Kitchen. And through my online media presence, my books, including my soon-to-be-released cookbook, Doc Fix My Plate, The Physician in the Kitchen's Prescriptions for Your Healthy Meal Makeover, I help busy households enjoy healthy eating without impacting their hectic schedules.
I was excited to learn about you through one of the platforms that we were on. And so there's nothing that means so much more to me and probably even our listeners than to know that there's a physician who is on board with this way of living.
Definitely. It's just been a journey for me. And, I went to medical school back in the 1900s. And so we weren't really taught about food as medicine per se. Of course, we knew that certain conditions were linked to diet and so forth, but actually being able to prescribe or recommend foods in a certain way just wasn't part of our curriculum. So this has been a real continuing education project for me as well.
Now, I do want our listeners to know that this is Heart Health Month, and we are going to talk a little bit about prevention, especially when it comes to heart disease. And so now, we want this message to go out to our patients. We want this to go out to our listeners. And so I mentioned that a third of my husband's patients are of Spanish-speaking backgrounds and also African-American. But also there's also the other component of having not as good access to healthy food and having some limitations there. So I'm hoping that we can talk about that as well. There's just so much. I've heard you also say that you are a lover of kitchen gadgets. And I thought I'd start off by showing off some of my latest gadgets.
I love it. I love it. Kitchen gadget junkie here. I am in the club. Yes.
I should have asked you ahead of time to bring one of your favorite gadgets, but
it would have been hard to choose just one.
Exactly. So my husband teases me about all the different gadgets, but to me, I really see them as tools. I also enjoy being in the kitchen. It's very zen-like for me to be there. I feel almost like a scientist, like a chemist working things up. So I just wanted to show you, our listeners may not be able to see this if you're only listening to the audio version, but Dr. May probably have one of these where it's just basically a way to preserve your avocado.
Avocado. I do not.
Right. Well, the reason I have this and I found it in one of the stores that I shop at is because I don't always eat an entire avocado, and sometimes they're very big, large. So I just only use maybe half. And then the other half that still has the seed, you kind of face it down. and save it. It doesn't save for a very long time, but it'll save at least 1 or 2 days. And then again, I use it for my salads and things like that. And now we're into the air fryer. So I'm throwing all these things at you because I'd love for you to talk about how you do food demos on your channel. So this is my latest gadget, and it's a liner for the air fryer.
Oh, silicone, it looks like.
Yes. And so normally, you know, we're concerned about the surfaces of some of these gadgets and appliances that we use. This one allows you to kind of just put your items in there, like your potatoes or whatever you're air frying, and then lift it out without it having touched the other surfaces. I love the gadgets. I mean, that's what makes cooking fun. So
I agree. And it's funny you mentioned it feeling like a scientist, because I my affectionate nickname for my kitchen is my lab. And so when I'm in there mixing it up, creating recipes, trying out things, I definitely feel like I'm, you know, in the lab. So yeah, I love that analogy.
Yes. So let's get started in learning more about you. So you were in practice for over 20 years. You have recently left medicine. You're kind of practicing medicine in a different way, as we know, food as medicine. What was it like? I'm curious first. How did you, and I love this question because you wonder like how people decide to go into medicine in the first place. How did you decide to go into medicine? And then also once you were in medicine, were there things that you wondered, I wonder if there's anything else we can do aside from prescribing, you know, medication and doing treatments?
Yeah, great question. For me, I've literally all my life I've known I wanted to be a doctor. I have a personal history as a patient. I've had several operations as a child throughout my childhood. So I was in and out of hospitals in New York City pretty much from age 1 to age 12. And then it kind of slowed down to a trickle after that. But became very familiar with the workings of a hospital as a patient. And then in about 8th or 9th grade, I took a science class and we studied the human body, and we covered the eye, the kidney, skin, and one other organ. I don't remember, but I was hooked and I was like, I got to learn more about this. So pretty much for me, it was sealed then. And so as far as, you know, how did I make this transition? So I finished residency in 1999 and practiced up until 2018 in a variety of settings. I'm a family physician. So I did primary care for 15 years and then urgent care and occupational medicine for 5. And, you know, just over the years saw the toll that these chronic diseases take: hypertension, diabetes, insulin resistance, hypercholesterolemia, obesity. I have several members of my family that have been affected. I've lost both my grandmothers died at early ages in their 60s, one from coronary artery disease and one from complications from a stroke. So, you know, definitely had it hit home. And so just, and then a part of it too, was just my aging. I turned 50, I'm 51 now. So as I got closer to 50, I started kind of, you know, taking stock. You reached that half century mark. And just wanted to kind of know what else. And you just see and hear so many things. And again, for me, it was, well, I've been out of school for a while and I've done continuing medical education. As a physician, you have to stay current to keep your certifications. But for me, it really took on just a whole holistic kind of thing, kind of like the, you know, the stars aligning, if you want to say that, because, I do enjoy cooking, but at the same time, I was like, well, I've never really been a big red meat eater. And so the idea of exploring other options for protein, you know, trying to get my son to eat as healthily as he can. Really, it all just kind of came together for me. And then physician in the kitchen just evolved from that. And kind of here we are.
So now how did the information come to you? If you weren't trained in using food as medicine and all the information that we know today, how did this come about?
Actually, I'm an avid reader. And so I happened upon a book called How Not to Die by Dr. Michael Greger. I hope I'm saying that right. And he, in this book, he takes the top, I believe it's 17 conditions that Americans die from cancer to heart disease to even infections. And he dissects literally what role our food is playing in that. And it had me hooked. And the book is pretty thick. It's like a Bible. It's thick because he's got the research to back it up. You know, everything we do in medicine, as your husband can attest, is evidence-based, right? When we were in school, when I was in school, you know, some stuff we just kind of passed down because, well, that's how it's always been done. But, you know, over time, we've really pushed and navigated more toward evidence-based medicine. If we do this, do we have the science that says that this will be the outcome, or what will be the outcome, and who is it better for? You know, so because not everybody responds the same to everything. So reading that book with all of the citations and the examples of the research that he had was immensely eye-opening. And so, it just really kind of sparked my interest. And then I started my own vegan, I call it veganish journey. And I blog about it on my website, drmoniquemay.com, because I've never been a really big red meat eater, but I still like things like honey, which if you're a strict vegan, you don't eat. And I do like, you know, fish and sometimes some chicken. So I haven't made it completely to vegan yet, but the overwhelming majority of my nutrition comes from plant sources. And so along the way, I started writing this blog called Dr. Monique's ABCs, vegan ABCs, my favorite food ABCs. And basically each letter is dedicated to whatever food I had recently discovered or was repurposing to make a plant-based version of a traditional food. And so that's what I really enjoy doing, is showing people how to veganize, quote unquote, veganize their favorite foods. And just the discoveries along the way, like aquafaba, you know, the liquid in a can of beans that for years I have been pouring down the drain, right? You get your beans, you rinse off that water or that juice. Well, you know, chickpeas and other white beans, you can actually use that as an egg white substitute and make a beautiful, luscious meringue with it. So just things like that have been just so, it brings out the food geek in me. And so I just feel, you know, impassioned about it and want to share this with other people. Like, hey, did you know about this? And so that's kind of how it all came together.
Yes. So you have this series on YouTube and you also blog about it. Like you mentioned, it's called Veganish. I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that. And you also mentioned the word flexitarian. I happen to have read a book called The Reducitarian Solution. And I think it kind of goes a little bit along the same lines of kind of crowding out some of the foods that don't serve us, that are not very beneficial, like say some of the processed foods and things like that, and bringing in more healthy plant-based foods. Can you tell us about that series and what people can expect?
Yeah, sure. So actually it's on Facebook and it's on blackdoctor.org. I'm a guest content creator, I guess you want to call it, on blackdoctor.org. And every week we do the show called Veganish. And in that show, I kind of peel back the onion layer, bad food pun, I couldn't resist, and let people kind of see a little bit of kind of behind the scenes, or share with them my journey toward a more plant-based diet. And we talk about all kinds of things like, is something vegan or nah? You know, some common things around your house that you may not really think about, or you might be surprised to find out are not vegan, as well as I try to provide relevant current events in nutrition. So nutrition in the news. And sometimes I do cooking demos. So it's really just a outreach effect, if you want to say, or outreach attempt to break down kind of what it means to be more plant-based, not make it so overwhelming to some people, you know, debunk some myths like it's too hard or it's too expensive, things like that, and really make it a conversation where people leave the show feeling more empowered. And then as far as your question about that particular book, I'm not familiar with that book, but the idea definitely speaks to me because it's so funny. You know how Facebook shows you, you know, memories. And so I became one of those people who post food pics. I used to hate, I looked back and I laughed. And I'm like, I used to be like, oh my God, why is this person posting their food? Who cares? Well, of course, I've become that person. And apparently I've been doing it for at least 7 years because Facebook posted a picture, reminded me of a picture that I posted of a dinner. Now, the dinner looks delicious, but I look at it now with, you know, open and new eyes. And, you know, I talk about the healthy plate, you know, the concept of cutting your plate into fourths and what should be filling those sections. And ideally, it should be half of it should be plant-based, fruits and vegetables. A fourth of it should be a protein, whether it's animal-based or not. And then another fourth would be your carb, preferably a complex carb, with some fat in there, you know, as a dressing or so forth. Well, this picture from 7 years ago, it was in fourths, but the broccoli, the only vegetable on the plate, was so small, it wasn't even a full fourth. And it was mostly, it had rice and it had some bread. So half of it was carbs and another quarter was a piece of salmon. So it was just so funny to see a pictorial demonstration of how far I've come, how far my thinking has evolved. And so, but yeah, definitely the idea of eating the rainbow. I talk to my social media followers about eat the rainbow, eat all these beautiful colors. When you walk into the produce section of your grocery store, I mean, it's just gorgeous. There's red, there's yellow, there's orange, there's purple. I mean, all green. There's all colors out there. And all of those colors are phytonutrients, healthy plant chemicals that are chock full of antioxidants and vitamins and minerals and fiber, things that help to decrease the onset or slow the progression of chronic diseases such as heart disease and diabetes and cancer. So definitely filling your plate with mostly foods from those types of, from those groups, is just beneficial for you in so many ways. And, you know, we eat with our eyes first. So seeing all those colors and having that on your plate, it makes you want to, you know, taste it and see what that's all about. So kudos to the authors of that book, because I agree. Definitely we need to switch our mindset, I think, as far as, you know, how much meat we should be eating. And, you know, whether you become fully plant-based or not, that's your business. But what I try to do is just show you why you should be more mindful and try to incorporate more meat, even if it's just one day a week, like a meatless Monday. At least you're getting more plants and more that are more beneficial for you.
I have always been a foodie. So when you talk about photographs of your, you know, the past 7 years and your love for food, your love for cooking, really, it's always been there. I kind of feel like I can identify with that. I have always considered myself a foodie. And now that I eat this way, I'm still a foodie. I still love food. I still eat with my eyes. I still savor every bite. And it's so obvious when I'm done cooking and my husband, he likes to serve himself. So he plates his food, you know, he puts his food on the plate and then he's always ready. He's like, here you go, take your picture. Like he's already conditioned to me photographing. But it's because I feel like yourself, I feel like I have to continuously share these ideas for people who are still kind of not knowing what to eat. And I know that also for you, words are important. So you don't like to necessarily say that people struggle, but maybe that there are some ways that you're trying to offer support so that they're better equipped to be in the kitchen. So now, when did you start your actual demos in your kitchen? Because that's huge. You have such great positive energy when you're teaching people and you're able to do both. You're able to cook and talk at the same time, which can be, for me, very hard.
Well, thank you for that. First, I just want to say, you know, you're exactly right, because sharing is caring, number one. But number two, what you may think is so simple or so obvious could really unlock something for somebody else. And so and I can't even tell you, it could be something that you as an experienced cook might think is really nothing. Because I've had that experience where I'll post something, it's kind of like a throwaway, just like, oh, haha, you know, this is what I did goofing around in the kitchen today or whatever. And somebody will write back and say, oh my gosh, I've never thought of that. And that was, I've been wondering what I could do with that or something to that effect. So definitely. As far as when did I start doing it on social media, I would say 2019. So not that long. I've always, you know, however long I've been on Facebook, which I don't even know now how long that's been. I've done stuff here and there, but nothing like really formalized as when I started doing it in 2019. It was part of a coaching program that I'm in. I have an amazing business coach. His name is Dr. Dre. And so live streaming was one of the requirements. You know, he's like, you got to get out there. People have to know who you are. They have to see your face and so forth. And it really helps to make you more comfortable and more flexible and that kind of thing. So as far as when I started doing it kind of consistently, a little bit more polished, I would say 2019.
Great job Dr. Dre has done in coaching you, because I've heard you talk about you have your hashtags that you use. You have such great presence and confidence. But live streaming, yeah, it can scare a lot of people just to go live. But you're very comfortable doing all of that. And I admire that.
Thank you. It's come with time and practice. So anyone listening to me, please don't, if you walk away with nothing else, please realize you too can do it, because I actually don't like to speak in public. And so it really has helped me. And like anything you want to be successful at, it really is mindset. Anything you want to have a good outcome at that you've attempted is getting that mindset right. And so when you kind of turn out some of that negative thinking and tune out some of the negative thinking and put tools in place to help you overcome that, that's when you really start to see the success.
Exactly. Now, it is Heart Health Month, so I wanted to talk about lifestyle. So I'm very much into lifestyle medicine, you know, using food as medicine, exercise as medicine, also stress management, all the components that if they're not in place can contribute to the development of disease, or at least the progression of it. When I think of heart disease, which is the number one killer, and I'd love for you to tell us more about that, it's scary. So could you tell us what contributes to heart disease in the first place, and what can we do to prevent that?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. This is so timely, because as you mentioned, February is American Heart Month, and it's really set aside to raise our attention and our awareness to the fact that coronary artery disease is the number one killer in this country. And that may be surprising to some people. It's not cancer, you know, it's not other things. It is heart disease. And this past Friday was Go Red for Women Day. And that was meant to, again, increase awareness that 1 out of 3 women will die from heart disease. And what's even more concerning or alarming is that women don't always have the same symptoms as men do. You know, men, we think of the classic, oh, I feel like there's an elephant sitting on my chest, I'm sweaty, I'm nauseous, the pain is going up into my jaw. Those are all classic textbook symptoms that literally no doctor should miss. But women don't always have those. And I can remember very vividly from my own practice admitting 2 women or sending 2 women to the ER from my office because they thought they were having indigestion. And so they came to see me instead of going to the ER. So to answer, you know, your question, it kind of goes back to all those colorful foods that I was encouraging people to eat, specifically red foods. And it's so funny that it happens to be red. You know, we think of, you know, February is Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day is this coming Monday. We're talking about the heart. So all this red stuff. And it just so happens that the foods that are good for your heart happen to be red. Things like red bell pepper, cranberries, tart cherries, beets, red onions, strawberries, raspberries, watermelon. I mean, the list goes on and on. And they all contain, again, these phytonutrients, these plant chemicals that are antioxidants. They contain fiber. They contain chemicals that make your body increase the production of nitric oxide, which your husband, I know, is very familiar with. It helps to, that chemical helps blood vessels dilate or relax. And it's kind of the secret ingredient in medicines like Viagra. So what we know about heart disease, let me answer the question about, you know, what causes heart disease. We know now that it's actually a disease of the endothelium, which is the lining of the blood vessels in the heart and throughout the body. And so the things that can increase the risk for developing plaque, you know, think of your heart arteries as pipes. Well, what happens to the pipes in your house if hair gets clogged in there, grease gets clogged in there? You know, you start off with a brand new pipe that's a nice, you know, you can see right through it. Over years in your house, you know, you're putting all kinds of stuff down your drains. Those pipes get clogged, hair and grease and whatever else is in there. So what happens? You have a slow drain, right? You take a bath, you get out, that water is taking forever to get out of the tub, go out of the tub. That's what's happening in your heart and those blood vessels. So we have medicines that can go in and kind of help reduce that, or procedures that can be done to go in and physically remove that, or stents can be put in to just open up those pipes and let the blood flow back through there. But things that increase your risk for having that, the things that we look at risk factors as far as what you can control and what you can't control. Obviously, your age, right? The older you get, the risk for heart disease may go up. Family history. You can't control your genetics, right? If it runs in your family, if all the men in your family have heart attacks in their 40s, not much you can do about that risk factor. But then you certainly want to talk to your doctor about the other risk factors that you can control. Race. We know that certain ethnic groups have higher rates of heart disease. African Americans, Hispanics, Native Americans. So those are things that you can't change. And then sometimes even environmental things can play a role. So the things that you can change, the risk factors that you can change, again, diet, exercise level, whether or not you smoke, how much alcohol you drink, what type of recreational drugs you use, all these kinds of things, your stress levels, all of these things are in the column that you as an individual can control. And that's where we try to make the most impact. And a big part of that is diet. And so what I was alluding to earlier about the red foods that help your heart, those, by incorporating those into your diet, you are taking in natural forms of, you know, they help to lower cholesterol. They help to lower the bad cholesterol and help to raise the good cholesterol. They help to decrease insulin resistance, which is often a precursor to diabetes, right? We talk about insulin resistance. Well, what do we mean? We all make insulin, unless you have type one diabetes, where you don't make enough. We all have insulin. Well, when you have obesity or conditions such as polycystic ovarian syndrome, other conditions where your body is the tissues in your body don't respond to your insulin. And that's why we call you insulin resistant, meaning you've got enough insulin, but the target organs, your muscles, your liver, your adipose tissue, they're not responding to it. And so that sets off a cascade of negative health effects. So those are the things that these red foods help to prevent or to reverse. Risk for cancer, heart disease, all of those things can be greatly modified by eating a more whole plant-based diet, getting away from processed, sugary, fatty, you know, all this stuff that we think of as good, getting away from that, or at least in moderation, you know, not as often as maybe we typically do, for a much better, just taking care of your heart from the inside out. And then of course there's exercise, right? We mentioned your exercise level, getting regular amounts of exercise, most days out of the week. Not saying you have to go out and run a marathon, but you aren't made to just be sedentary either. We were given, I heard the perfect thing the other day, and someone said, if God wanted us to be, stationary, we'd be trees. You know, he gave us feet for a reason. And I love that. And it's like, yes, move in whatever capacity you can move, you know, even if you can't walk very much. Move those arms, you know, and of course, everything I'm saying, and I always like to preface my comments by saying, you know, this information is meant to be informational and for entertainment purposes. We're not trying to prevent diagnose anything here, but we do want to give you information that you can go back to your doctor with and map out a plan that makes sense and is best for you. But yeah, whatever exercise you're able to do, try to do it most days out of the week, you know, 3 to 5 days a week, and start small. If you haven't been doing anything, go to your doctor and make sure everything's okay for what you want to do, and then just start somewhere.
So now what about the rest of us that are a little older? I can see how people can prevent when they're young, when they're in their 20s, 30s, maybe even 40s. So what would you say to an individual that's a little bit older already and may have already suffered a heart attack? Would someone like that still benefit from these lifestyle changes?
Definitely. That's what we call secondary prevention. And that's an excellent question, because it speaks to the fact that as long as you're still alive, you can make changes. And in fact, the book I mentioned earlier, How Not to Die, Dr. Geiger starts off talking about his own grandmother, how when I believe he was in medical school, she was diagnosed with heart disease in her 60s, I think, late 50s, early 60s. And at the time, they pretty much were like, well, pretty much, you know, go home and get comfortable and just get ready to die. Like they gave her the most abysmal prognosis. And she happened to find this man. I don't even think he was a doctor, but he was promoting the benefits of a health of a plant-based diet. She started following this diet. They had given her, I think he said, like 3 months to live. And she was in her 60s. She died like in her late 80s, early 90s. So she had already been diagnosed with heart disease and made these changes. So yes, I mean, that's a pretty dramatic example, I think. But yes, I mean, it goes without saying that once you implement some of these changes, and that's where your doctor comes in. That's where your healthcare team comes in, your doctor, your nutritionist, you know, your exercise specialist, if you've seen a physical therapist, all of these people, your pharmacist, lots of people on this team can help create and plan if that's appropriate for you. We know that there are genetics involved. And so, you know, maybe there's certain tests your doctor can run to just see what genes you carry or how they can target. You know, we're definitely in medicine now getting into more targeted therapies for a variety of disorders. And so there's a lot that can be done. So by no means, you know, just because you've had a heart attack doesn't mean that, oh, game's over. No, if you survive that heart attack, take that as a, you know, the second chance that you've been given and make the changes that you can. You know, the people who get me are the ones who had the heart attack and then you come back and they're still smoking and, you know, they're doing things that they can't control. And so that's where they need to reach out and get the help that they need, because, you know, what's the challenge there? What's stopping them from, cause they know what they need to do, you know, but they need to kind of look into, well, why can't I get there? What's stopping me to being successful in making these changes?
It is also Black History Month. We know that African-American community as well can be at higher risk for heart disease and strokes. And it's also part of the culture. It's part of what makes us feel so comfortable in terms of the foods that we eat. It's a shared experience. It's all about coming together as community. I understand why people feel torn when they make that significant change, when they stopped eating foods that, you know, loved ones, family shared together. You know, I wonder if you want to speak about that, what it's like when you make the change and not everybody comes on board. How does one stand up to that? How do you live your authentic self and take care of yourself without pushing everyone away?
That is a great, great question. And yeah, I mean, they call it comfort food for a reason, right? Because it gives us comfort, because not all, we don't always eat because we're hungry, right? We eat because we're bored or we're sad or we're nostalgic for something. So food serves a lot of purposes. And like you said, when there's that, it's that touch point, you know, and we use it to show love, right? As a mother, you want me to, I remember when I had my son, when he was first born, I was having some issues with breastfeeding, and I would have dreams that I wasn't feeding him enough. I mean, like, so it's, you know, that's real, is you feel like, okay, that's mothering 101, is like feed your kid, right? So it's so important. And it's the way that a lot of cultures that people show love. So, you know, in the African American community, pork for us, it's for, there's a saying, they eat it from the rooter to the tooter, from the nose to the tail. I mean, and there are pig feet, there are pig tails. So yeah, but a lot of that goes back to slavery, right? I mean, the slaves were had to come up with their own food. They were often given scraps, you know, after the masters were, you know, family was taken care of and they've worked all day in the fields. Like that was what they had to survive on. And so that got passed down through the generations. Fortunately, we don't still have those situations, but it can be a struggle or a challenge to change those mindsets. So what I try to encourage people to do is you can still enjoy certain versions of that. And obviously if you're vegan, you're not going to be eating pig feet, but you know, those flavors, the smells, you know, the texture of some of those foods, you can actually recreate those with certain things. Like for example, seitan, which is wheat meat. It's made from the wheat protein. So if you're gluten sensitive, you wouldn't be able to eat this, but I found a recipe online for some ham. and for made with wheat meat, seitan. And it was delicious. It had the texture. It had the, I even put a little, the glaze on it, like you glaze a ham. It was really good. And I'm not even a big ham eater. So for me, it was good. And even my son who loves ham, he was like, it's all right. You know, he's not fully on board yet. But so you, how to be your authentic self is if you know you're going to be and I talk about this during the holidays, particularly like how to, not just survive, but thrive during the holidays when you are able to go to a gathering, which we know has been challenged here lately. Eat before you go or take your food with you. And in fact, volunteer to bring a dish, but then don't tell people it's vegan. Now, people may know because if they know you're vegan, they're like, oh, well, she's only going to bring something that's vegan. But I have a delicious recipe for vegan mac and cheese that my family is like, that's delicious. And it doesn't have eggs. It doesn't have, animal milk. It doesn't have animal cheese, but it's still ooey gooey and it melts and it's got the crust on it. So it's got those same elements that, at least for me, mean a good homemade mac and cheese. So it may take a little planning, but anything worth doing right takes planning. It doesn't have to be burdensome and overwhelming planning, but you shouldn't just be haphazard about what you put in your body. And I use this analogy all the time. I use it when I was in practice. If you were gifted with a Porsche, with a Carrera, a 911, whatever, would you pull up to your local gas station and put 87 octane in that car and expect it to vroom, vroom and take off down the highway and go from 0 to 100? You would not. So why do you think you can just put anything in your body and it's going to perform at its maximum? And I'm not even talking about becoming like I'm not talking about performing like an Olympic athlete. I'm talking about performing like the athlete in your life, as a mom, as a dad, as a whatever role you fulfill. You want to be able to do it to your best. And that starts with the fuel that you provide for your body. So, I mean, so that's how you do it. I mean, you do it in ways, you do it in small steps. And I've heard people say this and I've experienced this at gatherings. You bring the vegetarian or the vegan dish and watch what happens. If it's good, people are going to eat it. They don't care that it's, not necessarily animal based. And they may even be like, oh my God, that was really good. And I hosted my girlfriends for the summer. We had a little pool party and I had this whole spread of, plant-based stuff and they ate and they were like, I'm full and I feel good. Like, sometimes you just eat all this stuff and it just slits in your stomach and you just feel so blah. Studies have shown people on a plant-based diet actually eat more and actually still lose weight because it's what they're eating. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it's a series of steps that should be, that for most people can be done.
Yes. And you also just touched on something that's important in terms of how people feel. Sometimes people do not know how bad they have been feeling until they feel better, until that's lifted. And then once you start along the lines of that lifestyle, you realize that you deserve this. Like, you deserve to feel good. You deserve to eat the best foods on the planet. And so speaking of food, I'd love to touch on your two books. One is will be coming out. For our listeners who might not be familiar with the one, your Amazon bestseller, Meal Masters, Your Simple Guide to Modern Day Meal Planning. Can you tell us first about that and then tell us about the one that's coming next? Because I love the title, Doc Fix My Plate. I know that I'm going to want that one. Can you tell us about both and what to expect? I want to know what recipes are in there too.
Okay, certainly. So the first book is more kind of a how-to book. It's actually, there are no recipes in the first book. So the Meal Masters, Your Simple Guide to Modern Day Meal Planning, really is just a conversation that I used to have with my patients. And in addition, I add in some tips about food. So by that, I mean, the first few chapters are why should you eat healthy? How do you eat healthy? Why do you need to exercise? All that kind of basic stuff. And then I go into talking about how do you get your food? You know, do you do it yourself? Do you have a meal delivery? You know, and if you're looking at meal delivery, kind of what are some of the things to look for in these meal plans? And then I include gadgets. Of course, there's a chapter on gadgets because I talk about how to shop for food, you know, how to save. You know, do you buy your food online? Do you get it at a big box discount store? You know, once you've got all this food and you've made all this food, well, you don't want it to go to waste. So how do you prepare? How do you store it? So we talk about storage. We talk about, you know, how to set up your pantry. So it's the first book is really a how-to book. The second book, which will be out soon, is Doc Fix My Plate. And it's a play on words because, you know, fix as in prepare a plate to give to someone, like you said, your husband does so you can take your Instagram pictures, or fix as in correct my plate, the physician in the kitchen's prescriptions for your healthy meal makeover. Now that one is, I'm so excited that this has finally come about. It's been a labor of love, but it has over 50 recipes, 50 vegan recipes, but it also has excerpts from the blogs I was mentioning earlier about the my favorite ABCs, and then again, another list of gadgets and how to use them. But it also has it's chock full of really helpful information on how to set up a vegan kitchen, how to substitute and do instead of doing animal sources for butter and milk and cheese, international cuisines that are vegan friendly. So lots of information in there that I really think people are going to, you know, find something in, even if you're fully vegan or if you're a newbie vegan. I think there's something I think there's something for someone, for everyone in this book. And I'm really, really excited to get it out to people.
Yeah, congratulations on
Thank
this.
You.
You have done so much. I mean, and so you're also still coaching, right? Are you doing like online coaching and online cooking classes, or what programs do you have?
I do. So I have a program called Cooking with Dr. Monique, where it's a subscription series, and you can either pay for the kind of live, you know, we could do a one-on-one, you could do a live group, or you could do the on-demand feature where you'd have access to previous recordings of me preparing vegan meals.
This is great. I can pick your brain about so many things. And I know that you said you couldn't really choose a favorite gadget from the kitchen, but could you kind of throw out a couple of things that you really enjoy using in the kitchen?
Sure. I will say my mandolin has become if you're just going to twist my arm, I will say my mandolin. I use it recently. I'm already working on volume 2 of the cookbook, by the way. So in volume 2, I have a recipe for pickled beets and red onion. So that red food again. And I have found that using a mandolin is perfect because you get those, you can adjust. So for those who don't know, a mandolin is a super sharp. So you definitely want to be careful when you use it and use the guard that comes with it. But it's just a way to cut things like apples and beets and potatoes or whatever into perfectly even slices. So you can set there's a dial that you can change the thickness of the slice. And so I use it to make my own apple rings or, you know, whatever. Because it's so funny though, because now that I'm in culinary school, which I've started this culinary school in July, it's a plant-based online culinary school. It's amazing. But we have to learn how to use a knife. And a lot of these gadgets I got was because my knife skills were not the best. And so, you know, I'm in class every week and I hear my chef instructor, and she's just like, yeah, you know, all you need is a knife. All you need is a knife. And so like real chefs, all they use are just a really good chef knife. But I'm not quite there yet. So I still lean on some of these gadgets. But yeah, I would have to say it's my mandolin followed by, because I really have been using my chef's knife more now that I think about it. But
what about like for shredding? I always wonder what people use. There are different things that we can do, like to, for example, shred the carrots.
Yeah.
You can use a peeler or the other grater thing.
Use a grater. You could also use a food processor that has the grater blade. That would probably be my second one, is my food processor, because I use that for pretty much everything. But also number 3 that I think would be a microplaner, which is a fine grater, and you can, you know, do your garlic on there, your ginger, your, you know, your fresh, if you've got fresh ginger, fresh turmeric root, chocolate, you can do if you want to make something look really cute and you want to just drizzle some chocolate dust on it. You take your chocolate bar and use your grater. So, I would say those are my top three that really helped me with food prep. And then now I've started using, I'm going to be doing more videos on camera, using a little, somebody said it looks like a college hot plate, but it's a little induction.
I have one of those, a stovetop. I bought that one initially, we have a sailboat. But then we got a camper van and I'm cooking all the time, right? So I bought one because from what I've heard I use it now. I use it more than my stove. It's because, first of all, you can move it anywhere, so it's easy to film. It heats up less than gas. Like if you're on a sailboat or anywhere else, it cooks faster. Things are just like a lot more. You just feel like you have so much more control. And I do use mainly stainless steel things don't stick, but I'm loving it so much that and by the way, is this course the Ruby course? Because I love that.
It's actually my school is Escoffier. It's named after Auguste Escoffier. It's a famous French chef, and it's based out in Boulder, Colorado, but I'm doing the online program.
Oh my goodness. I can't wait for your videos. So tell us like anything else that you'd like our listeners to know about where your videos can be found, any other links that you'd like to share with us?
Sure. I do want to say just one thing about the induction stovetop.
Oh, yes.
Just one trick about do you know how to tell what's going to work on the, like what type of pot will work on the, what type of metal pot will work? Do you know little trick?
But please share with our listeners. Yes.
Yeah. Just get a magnet. All you need is a magnet. And if the magnet sticks to your pot, then you can use it on the induction surface. If it doesn't, then you can't.
That's right.
Because it's got to do with the amounts of metal and all that in there. And so, yeah. So just because it's metal, just because your pot is metal, doesn't mean it'll work on there. You have to make sure it's got it. Because you can use cast iron on there. Cast iron works.
I've heard you say that you are interested in having your own branded gadgets. I don't know if appliances. Would you like to talk about that?
That's something I'm putting out there in the universe that I'm working on. But yeah, I would love to have something kind of for that starter cook. And so something that definitely is in the works. So stay tuned. There'll be more about that.
Well, that's exactly why I was drawn to you is your brand. The physician in the kitchen, just it's perfect. What draws me to you. It's your energy in the kitchen. So I would buy anything you recommend because you have experience in the kitchen, so you know what works. So yes.
Yeah. I'd love to be, you know, to have the physician, the, you know, the medical expertise and along with the kind of the culinary expertise. I just love that it really just comes together, you know, so much. And it's helped me go from, you know, administering or advocating or teaching patients one-on-one to now I can share this information with, you know, millions. So it's just, and I think the time is just right for it. I think people want to be informed. People want to kind of know, you know, I've been dealing with this. Is there another way I can do? Is there something else I can do? I don't want to just take all these pills. And I encourage that. I encourage people to be advocates for themselves, and I encourage them to be the expert for themselves. You may not know the big fancy, you know, 15 syllable word for the medical condition you have, but, you know, be as informed as you can and be an advocate and partner with your doctor and getting the best health that you can, because health really is wealth. It really is. When you're healthy, you can do so much. You can do so much. And that's what I encourage people to really tap into that and take ownership of that and grow that as much as they can.
Dr. Monica, so I've heard that there are certain ways that men themselves can probably know if they have anything to be concerned about when it comes to heart disease. Can you talk to us about ED?
Sure. So I encourage men who are suffering from erectile dysfunction to see their doctors and not to just blow it off as, oh, I'm getting older, or I'm stressed out, or my team didn't make the Super Bowl. Take it seriously, because remember we talked about how those arteries in the heart get blocked. Well, guess what? The arteries all throughout your body can get blocked. That's blocked arteries lead to strokes in the brain and in the penis. if those arteries are getting blocked, you may have difficulty performing. So think of it kind of as like a early warning system, right? So if you're starting having problems down below, it could be a sign that things are starting to build up in the heart. And so don't just brush that off. Go see your doctor, get checked out. He may want to do a, you know, some type of heart test as well, instead of just giving you a prescription for one of the drugs that helps with that. And again, you can get your own natural, the type of drug that we use for ED, Viagra and others. You can get some of those same natural effects in foods from like asparagus and beets and watermelon, walnuts. All of those help with improving blood flow, sex drive, all of that. So just want to let guys know it's not just in your head and go get it checked out. Just make sure everything's okay.
Yes, very important. And I think I've heard you say that there's sort of a female version as well. Is that right when it comes to clitoral health?
Yeah, women definitely can suffer from pelvic congestion. They too can have decreased libido levels, you know, fibroids, all types of things that can affect a woman's from the brain, her sex drive, all the way down to being able to enjoy and sex and climax, you know, it satisfactorily. So yes, there are foods that can help with that as well. Again, nuts are amazing. You know, pistachios, walnuts, Brazil nuts, all of those are great for helping with sexual drive and blood flow, because some of them contain things like zinc that help produce testosterone, which, as we know, is the male hormone, and it can affect your libido. So yeah, all kinds of just delicious foods out there that, you know, your dark leafy greens. Don't forget about your dark leafy greens, your kale, your spinach. Those foods have wonderful payoffs as far as helping to improve blood flow, decrease chronic disease and ischemia, and things that can affect your sex drive and ability to have a satisfying sex life.
Yes. And I appreciate so much that you touched on how important it is for women in general to, you know, think about preventing heart disease or being aware, because we tend to juggle so much. I feel like it's harder for women. And by the way, the majority of my listeners are women. Mm-hmm. And so I think of that, like, how can we support women when we are so, it's harder for us to say no. It's harder for us to have those strong boundaries, and we overdo it as mothers, as wives, as, you know, running our households and running a career and businesses. And so we do it all, and it puts us at a higher risk for heart disease.
One thing I tell people, I remind people, is you can't pour from an empty cup. You just can't. Right. And so you've got to take time to fill that cup up somehow. You know, it's that hashtag self-care Saturday or self-care Sunday or whatever you want to call it. You know, my son now is 18, so he's on autopilot. But I remember when he was younger, I would, you know, people laugh when I say this, especially as a physician, but I would say, look, you know, if you're not unconscious, vomiting violently or bleeding profusely, like, these are mommy's 30 minutes, like, you know, and it's important to carve out that time, because not only are you caring for yourself, but you're also teaching your children some autonomy. You know, what mother here, raise your hand, hasn't been in the bathroom without somebody banging on the door? Like, I can't even pee in peace, right? So you want to be able to teach your children some resiliency, right? And so, you know, they'll be okay for 30 minutes. You know, I have a Peloton bike, and one of the instructors, that's what she says, like, close the door, you know, they'll be okay. They'll figure it out for 30 minutes. So, but it's important. It is so important. It teaches them boundaries. It teaches them responsibility while you are recharging, just like plugging in that iPhone at night, right? You got to recharge. So it's super important. That way you can show up and be really the most authentic and most effective person you can be. And there's actually a link on my blog for the sex, good foods and good sex. If you wanted to link that, if you just go to the blog page and set and, you know, search sex or whatever, I'm sure it'll come up. So feel free to post that if you like.
Absolutely. I will have all of that.
But yeah, I mean, as far as where people can find me, I'm on all social media at Physician in the Kitchen. My book is docfixmyplatebook.com. The first book, Meal Masters, you can get at mealmastersbook.com. And then the cooking subscription is Cooking with Dr. Monique. That's C-O-O-K-I-N-G. WITHDRMONIQUE.com. And then my website is drmoniquemay.com. So I'm everywhere. Everywhere.
Yay. I love it. And I'll make sure I have all those show notes. Dr. Monique, thank you for all this information that you've shared. I feel like it's really going to be very helpful for our listeners. And I'll make sure that I add links so that people can grab your Doc Fix My Plate book, which I love
so much. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Maya. I have really enjoyed this. And tell your husband I said hello. It's so awesome that he's, I know he is a busy man.
You've been listening to the Healthy Lifestyle Solutions podcast with your host, Maya Acosta. If you've enjoyed this podcast, do us a favor and share with one friend who can benefit from this episode. Feel free to leave us an honest review on Apple Podcasts. That helps us to spread our message. Thanks for listening.